can't really be proven one way or the other. The historical record affirms that a person who kills himself or herself in such a catastrophic way will take pains to make sure no one else is hurt. Sometimes it's just the opposite. I wasn't going to let him get off that easily. There were wars in the 20th and 21st that were dominated by deliberately suicidal warriors.
That's true, but not relevant to us.
People were driven by different passions then. Bruce shook his head. I can't believe it. A Jesuitical robot. It is in our nature to ask and answer questions, the female said. Of course, that was true. You didn't go through the trouble of making a simulated persona just to have tea with it and chat about the weather. Never a big topic inside a spaceship, anyhow. Suppose she was a suicide, Bannister said. How would you suggest a person go about committing suicide while she's strapped down in the dark, semi-conscious, not even in control of her basic body functions?
She has control of her mind, the woman said.
Not entirely. The machine's controlling her sensory input.
Her will, then. She does have control of her will.
I wanted to ask what she could know about will, but Cronkite answered first.
That's all the two of us are, if you think about it. Take away our will, and there's nothing but raw data.
That's just programming, Bruce said. A set of instructions people gave you that determines how you respond to input.
Forgive me for being Jesuitical, but how is your will different from that?
10. Timing. We made love, and I lay awake in the darkness for some time. I started to ease out of bed, and she touched my back.
You should try to get some sleep.
Glass of wine, I said. Sometimes that worked.
It's an idea.
Dim lights came on when I opened the bedroom door, and we padded over to the kitchenette table. I asked for half light, and that corner brightened. There was half a bottle left. I gave us each a small glass. Had to last another day.
We're on the wrong expedition, you know.
She closed one eye and looked at me through the pale red liquid. Christopher Columbus gave each of his crew 2.5 liters of Spanish wine a day.
Wow. No wonder they didn't make it to the Indies.
She smiled at that.
Is it Alex? That horrible...
Alex and other things. Those odd AIs from Earth.
But you work with templates like them all day.
Not quite like them. Ours have a degree of autonomy, but only within the terms of a detailed script. If you took a Parisienne from 1910 and dropped her in a Detroit ghetto 50 years later, she'd probably shut down in confusion.
These were more general purpose? I've seen the Cronkite one, but never met them.
You won't meet the other. It was just here for the meeting, then disappeared. Data backup, maybe.
You find their autonomy disturbing.
Yeah, but it's more than just autonomy. Talking with them is almost like talking with people. They have originality, personality. I ran my finger around the edge of the glass, making a pure note.
I wrote to J.B. back at Chimborazo.
Did you know him?
Of him. Cute Canadian AI researcher.
Cute? How can you tell under all that hair? Anyhow, I asked him what's up, what's happened the past few years to make such a difference. She went to the cooler and got out some tunoid and a package of rice crackers.
But you keep up with AI all the time, don't you?
Just as it applies to the time machine. Cronkite and probably the new woman present a new ball game every Monday. If they represent a new material technology, we might not be able to use it. Can't wave a magic wand. If it's just technique, well, maybe. I shrugged.
Maybe you don't want really smart robots stomping around inside your time machine.
She spread some of the fish-like substance on a cracker.
Here, eat your lysine. It will help you sleep.
Yes, doctor. Anyhow, it'll be a while before Jay can answer. Saturday at the earliest. We may be pretty busy. We were nearing the 700-day mark when we'd stop accelerating and mate with the waiting fuel supplies.
God, I hope it's not the wrong kind of busy. I can just see plumbing problems in all 5 ships. but it will make your life simpler, ultimately.
Ultimately. She set her glass on the table and filled it almost to the rim. On Earth, or any planet, the fluid would go to the top and bulge out in a meniscus because of surface tension. That would work in our artificial centripetal gravity, too, but with the ship's tiny acceleration, the liquid dipped down about a millimeter away from the lip, in the direction of flight. She tapped the rim of the glass there. This I won't mind losing. We'd talked about it before. Over time, sediments pile up in a uniformly asymmetric way, causing uneven and constantly increasing stress. Most of the problems that were uninteresting shit details were related to that. But any change to the system, even for the better, is going to generate problems.
Plus turning this beast around and chasing down the fuel, I said.
Well, I'm not going to waste any time worrying about it. She drank off the small glass and stood up, leaning over to give me a kiss. Thank you, Jake. Drink the rest if you want. I have to be up at 7. I watched her walking away and felt like a pretty lucky man. The old joke about the perfect wife being a wealthy nymphomaniac whose old man owns a liquor store. Of course, wealth has no meaning here, and everybody has the same liquor allowance. I still felt pretty lucky. What was actually keeping me awake was how to word the referendum. Yes or no, should we discontinue the use of the time machine until we can prove that it was not related to, was not a causal factor in, was not responsible for, the death of Alex Kaplan? In the absence of any unambiguous other cause, though, that could keep us shut down indefinitely. It would be a two-stage referendum. A preliminary vote, the results of which would be published, broken down as to gender, profession, and age, though that was becoming moot. A week of discussion, then a binding vote. Friday morning and evening, the day before mating with the fuel tanks, I had interviews scheduled. The morning one was a set piece, 10 minutes on the news hour. The evening was a call-in between 2100 and 2200. Time check global. I whispered, and the full information appeared on the wall. Earth message. Date 24:30:405. Time 01:32:22. Delay 06D06H25M. Spin down will commence for Manus 24:30:406 at 1500. The timing was lousy, everybody distracted by spin down. But it would be irresponsible to put the referendum off. We'd messaged everyone scheduled for the time machine in the next month about the possibility of danger. So far, we'd only had 2 cancellations. 1 for day after tomorrow. I'd take it. 1939. I rubbed my eyes and tried to focus, rocking gently from side to side. Train station smell, leather seat covers. We slid into the light and I recognized New York, leaving Penn Station. Bruce was sitting across from me. He was wearing a bottle green blazer, snazzy with plain white cotton shirt, open collar and linen pants, a jaunty straight pipe clenched in his teeth. The tobacco smelled like briar and cherry.
Waking up, sport?
I think, yeah. Penn Station. Where are we headed?
It's 1939, and we're taking the 10-minute ride out to the World's Fair in Flushing Meadows. Building the World of Tomorrow is what they called it. And in a literal way, it is. It's set up to be the nucleus of creeping suburbanism. Robert Moses fought hard to have it built here on the Corona ash dump that had been Fitzgerald's hell in The Great Gatsby a generation earlier. The nexus of the parkway system that would lead New Yorkers out onto Long Island. Of course, that's not what the slogan was supposed to mean.
I looked around. It's quiet for a train. Diane bumped his shoulder with a hip. He slid over and she sat down.
It's a special electric train that Penn RR put on. 10 minutes, 10 cents, so why buck the traffic in the parking?
She was all in blue. Puff shoulders and a wide blue leather belt with a fancy medieval buckle, navy skirt to just below the knee. A touch of Chanel No. 5,
wavy, marcelled hair to her shoulders, bride of frankincense. It was as if each detail clicked into existence when I thought about it. A strange feeling, a kind of clothing and grooming déjà vu. I looked down at my own rumpled but clean brown gabardine suit. The color was called tobacco. Wide checked tie, two-tone shoes, brown and black, that were a little tight. Both of them had deep tans. I was white as a fish's belly. While I was staring at the backs of my hands, Bruce reached over and touched my finger, and I was suddenly as tan as he was. "Zippity-doo-dah," he said. "It's not magic. We're all visitors here in some sense. We're not in the war, the next war, yet."
"No, this is May. Britain will join the war in September. The United States will stay out of it for another couple of years. The Neutrality Act technically keeps them even from selling arms to the nations that will be their allies against Hitler."
"A lot happens this year," Diane said. "Today, May 22nd, Germany and Italy signed their pact. Japan has started fighting Russia in Manchuria. In March, Franco took over Spain, a sort of dress rehearsal for Nazi technology and tactics. Germany took Czechoslovakia without a shot being fired. Russia and Germany will team up to attack Finland and Poland, but the alliance won't last."
"Finnegan's Wake and Mein Kampf," Bruce said. "Gone with the Wind and The Wizard of Oz. John Wayne's career is going to take off with Stagecoach, and all through the war he'll dodge the draft while playing heroic soldiers."
"First helicopter flight this year." She made a fluttering, rising gesture with her hands. "They won't be used much until the next war, though, and they really come into their own the one after that, the first one America loses."
"We win this one, though," Bruce said, belatedly from the point of view of the countries that suffered while we stalled. How do I know about...
"Just relax, Jake. Try to get a little shut-eye. You'll be on your feet for a while."
"Building the world of tomorrow," Diane said.
"They didn't quite get it right," Bruce said, and for some reason I did doze. I woke to the shudder and squeal of the train's brakes. It had become crowded, but there was no sign of the two folks I'd been talking to. Rude of me to fall asleep. People were chattering happily as they lined up at the two doors. For some reason, that seemed awful. Don't they know about Europe? The hell with it. Here to have some fun. I get these funny things in my head sometimes. On the platform outside the train, most of the people were standing around consulting maps or guidebooks. I slapped my pockets and didn't come up with anything, but I figured they'd be for sale everywhere. I waited in a short line and took my wallet out, stuffed with small bills, and gave a one to the ticket lady. She gave me back a quarter, and I went through swinging doors to the fair. It was pretty spectacular. Down an immaculate, multicolored promenade, the fairground was dominated by the famous Trilon and Perisphere, a huge phallic ball and spike at least a half mile away, gleaming white in the mid-morning sun. The only white buildings anywhere. I walked down the steps and started that way. Rainbow Avenue was still spotless in spite of a fairly large crowd. Halfway down, there was a kiosk where I got a hot dog and a guidebook for a dime each. I sat in the sun and worked on the hot dog while studying the map. Not possible to see it all in a day, but I would hit some high spots and come back another time.
"Jacob? Jake Brewer?"
I looked up from the map. It was someone I recognized but couldn't put a name to, an intense, dark-haired woman I knew from some musical connection. I took her hand.
"Ellie Morrow. Elle."
"Vivaldi," I said. "You play a wonderful flute."
"When and where?" She sat next to me and looked at the map. Wildflower perfume and a touch of sweat, not unpleasant. She was wearing a smart, tailored suit, light beige, red shoes with sensible low heels.
"Do you have a plan?"
"I was just going to wander. Is that enough of a plan for you?"
"Fine by me."
We got a couple of cokes and ambled toward the Perisphere.
"Amazing what they did with an old ash heap," I said.